It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Biden's son Hunter is facing criminal charges and a congressional investigation. Looks for the political and legal sides of the cases against him. First, if you're a frequent or even occasional viewer of Fox News, you're probably familiar with this type of commercial.
You invested in the stock market? In our world of fake news, here's what they're not telling you. Gold has outperformed the Dow for the past 17 years. That's the real news. Numbers don't lie. In the year 2000, if you invested $100,000 in the Dow, it would be worth about $197,000 today. But had you diversified just 20% of that into gold, your investment would be worth $248,000, 26% more. Call Lear Capital, the leader in precious metals investing with over 20 years experience and $2 billion in trusted transactions.
According to an analysis by the Washington Post, ads like this one from Los Angeles-based Lear Capital are a mainstay on not just Fox News, but also Newsmax, as well as podcasts featuring Republican Senator Ted Cruz from Texas and Rudy Giuliani. They didn't find any similar ads appearing on mainstream or left-leaning media. Lear is just one of many companies that target older viewers with pitches to invest retirement savings in their unique gold coins. But the investigation found that would-be investors paid high premiums for the products, in some cases leading to big losses in their retirements. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered those advertisements before? Where did you see them? Did they inspire you to invest in gold and these kind of gold coins in particular? Do you have a relative who paid attention to these ads and invested money for better or worse? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jeremy Merrill is a data reporter for The Washington Post focusing on technology. His new piece he co-authored for The Post is called How Right-Wing News Powers the Gold IRA Industry. Jeremy, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
What led you to dig into this story of these gold coins advertised so heavily on certain media outlets?
That's a great question. This actually started several years ago. As was mentioned, I focus on technology primarily, and I was looking at political ads on Facebook. You ordinarily expect to see politicians asking you for donations. You expect to see outside groups saying, hey, you should change your views on this issue. You expect to see people selling merchandise. And then I was just really puzzled to see ads on Facebook targeting people who were 59 years old or older, and targeting people specifically who were politically conservative, people who were Republicans, people who were fans of Sean Hannity, that sort of thing. With ads, you know, they didn't have the name of a company. It was just saying, hey, join this webinar to learn how to protect your retirement from the Democrats' coming retirement kill switch, or something sort of overheated like that. It just sort of stuck in my craw. Like, what is this? It was confusing. I went down the rabbit hole and found this company called Metals.com. Around the time we were looking into them, so were regulatory officials in a bunch of states saying their investors had been allegedly defrauded. They had put in hundreds of thousands of dollars and gotten gold and silver coins that were worth a lot less.
Let's talk
after about we did a story on that in 2019. Mm-hmm. I started getting emails and phone calls from people saying, hey, it's not just that one company. This is a whole industry.
And let's talk, Jeremy, about how this industry works. Now, when people talk about investing in gold, they might be buying, you know, gold futures where they never actually handle a piece of metal on their own. That's not the case with these so-called gold IRA companies. If I decide, hey, this advertisement sounds boffo, I want to invest, what happens? What do I get?
That's exactly right. Think about sort of ordinary choices might be to invest in stocks or bonds or mutual funds. If you're really into gold and silver, you can buy mining stocks or gold futures. Those are all options. You've also separately got people who are investing, so to speak, by collecting rare coins that really do have some historical value that they think, you know, someone's going to want this 1897, whatever. But what they're buying there is something that has some collectible value. That's not what we're talking about here. with the gold IRA industry, most of these companies are selling what are called bullion coins, which means the coins get their value from being made out of gold or being made out of silver. And they don't have any sort of special historical value. In many cases, they happen to be made by the government of Canada, of all places, which sells bullion coins that are well known, called maple leafs, as well as some weirder ones that have polar bears or other sort of Canadian wildlife on them.
And you talk... I want to get a case of like where this can go wrong. You talked to a guy named Ed DeSanto, 65-year-old. You describe him as a semi-retired Florida medical coder, identifies as politically conservative. He puts $100,000 into gold and silver in these coins. How much value in gold and silver did he end up getting?
What he ended up getting in terms of the weight of gold and silver he got was worth only $52,000. Which is a big loss. You know, he invested in 2019, which turns out to have been, you know, if you had the power of hindsight, actually a pretty good time to buy gold and silver because the prices have gone up since then. Mm-hmm. You know, the price of gold and silver, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, much like any other, anything else that you could invest in. But relative to 2019, the prices are higher now than they were then. But for his $100,000 investment, he cashed out a lot of it this spring. He still lost money, despite the fact that the market had gone up more than 30%. And that's in large part due to the commissions that he was charged by American Hartford Gold Group, the company that he invested with.
Talking to Jeremy Merrill with the Washington Post about his reporting on what's called the gold IRA industry. They advertise heavily on more conservative media, in some cases direct email and phone. You can join in by phone at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We won't buy your gold, but we want to hear your stories. Tom joins us in Oxford. Tom, hi.
Well, good afternoon. I'm actually not selling my gold. but I have a little of advice on these companies. The first is, if they're trying to sell you an IRA, keep in mind, you do not take physical possession of the gold. They are storing it for you in a vault someplace far away. And frankly, do you even know that they put the gold in the vault? It is stay away. In capital letters. If you want to invest in physical gold, the best move you can make is to visit a city with a United States mint. West Point, New York, Washington, D.C., for the headquarters building, Philadelphia, Denver, San Francisco. You can buy gold bullion coins literally at minimal markup. You know, they put it in a velvet case. And there's also no tax because you're buying it at a federal facility. And the coins that they want to sell you, they may be rare, but they're very often graded coins by a third party that have done their examination. It's a PCGS and NGC, but ultimately you're buying a coin in a sealed plastic slab.
Tom, I got you. Gave us a lot to talk about there. First of all, Jeremy, I was a little confused about this. They call it gold IRAs, but a lot of these companies actually do provide you. You do end up with these coins. And I had thought, like Tom did, that if we're calling an IRA, they'd be storing gold somewhere for you. Are both of these things happening?
In many of these cases, the gold is stored at a third-party depository, basically a bank. And so, you know, in many cases, you know, and in the cases of the companies that we discuss in my article, the gold and silver, they really do exist. And there's just this question over whether the customers really understood what they were getting. You know, the companies say their disclosure practices are all totally legal. The customers say they were shocked when they figured out what they had actually gotten. But there have been, as the caller noted, some instances, you know, including in the past year, and, you know, going back probably as far back as, you know, ancient Babylonia, of cases where people thought they were buying gold and it didn't really exist. It wasn't really in the vault. So there's all sorts of shenanigans that can take place. But in this case, yeah, a lot of people are using this, you know, totally legal, but kind of obscure practice to invest from their retirement savings in these products.
And Tom also mentioned, you know, if you really want to have gold coins in your possession, there are ways, or gold in whatever form, there are ways to buy it. And you have a follow-up piece with advice for experts. There are ways to buy it without these massive markups?
Right. You know, don't go out there and think that I'm saying you ought to do this or that you ought not do this. You just ought to be careful if you've already decided, hey, that's a good idea. A lot of financial advisors say investing in gold and silver is a terrible idea. Some say it's an okay idea, or even a good idea, as long as you limit it to a pretty small slice of your portfolio. But what I think everybody agrees on is that you want to minimize the amount of money that you pay to some salesman on the phone and maximize the amount of money that you spend on actual gold or silver. Maximize the amount of money you spend on the thing that you want and minimize the transaction costs. There are certainly reputable online dealers and reputable local coin stores where people can sort of minimize the amount of markup, or it's also called spread or premium, that they pay, which of course maximizes the amount of money you get worth of gold and silver.
Tom, thanks again for that call. We're talking to Jeremy Merrill, data reporter for the Washington Post, looking at a recent analysis he did looking at gold investment advertising on especially conservative media sources, as well as Facebook and elsewhere. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered this, either the ads, maybe a hard sell email, or even phone call or a series of phone calls? Do you have questions about how this all works? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Jeremy Merrill with the Washington Post, looking at so-called gold IRA companies that pitch unique gold coins as a retirement investment vehicle, often featuring very high markups for the precious metal, gold or silver in some cases, that you actually get. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, or stories. Back to your calls now. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good afternoon. I've learned a couple things from some recent public broadcasting pieces, PBS and NPR. And big takeaways for me were that, as you mentioned, if you see one of those commercials, you're watching a conservative station. And you won't find them on regular ones. The other is that pretty much the standard commission fee is one third. And a lot of people, when they get, when these, sellers, get their hands around them, so to speak, they will, divert their attention from that, and these guys will buy that not even knowing that they're losing a third there.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. And Jeremy, you reached out to some of these companies to ask about that, you know, the transparency of these fees, whether the buyers really know what they're getting into. What kind of things did you hear or not hear, as the case may be?
Yeah, Randy's exactly right that a lot of the companies, they'll say somewhere in their transaction agreements that people sign. Sometimes they're more transparent about it. Sometimes it's less, depends on the company, that they're going to charge 33% or 35%. Sometimes it just says up to 35% without actually saying the exact amount that you're being charged. The companies tend to say that their disclosures are legally adequate, that this is what they're required to do, and they do it. This has come into some question as regulators from almost every state and two federal regulatory authorities have sued five or so of these gold IRA companies all based around Los Angeles, and said that, you know, the those disclosures aren't adequate because the customers are confused. And in some cases that they're actually charging far more than that one third. One company is was alleged to have charged more than 200% as a markup for some of their coins, which is really quite a bit if you're thinking about what you'd get if you were investing your retirement savings.
Thanks a lot for that call. Patrick joins us now in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What do you want to bring up, Patrick?
So there are two things I want to bring up. The first is I'm only 23, but I've been a lifelong numismatist, and seeing scams related to coins is not at all surprising to me. You don't have to shake a stick very far online to find coins that are worth $20, $30 being sold for $80. So this, it being gold, is just the special thing, I guess. The other thing is that I'm not surprised that it's being marketed towards right-leaning people. There are a lot of people who are interested in precious metals who also are, shall we say, conspiratorially minded, that believe that the Federal Reserve is some sort of ploy to financially enslave the American people or something like that. So seeing that advertised more to more conservative-leaning people isn't a big surprise to me either.
Patrick, thanks for that call. And Jeremy, you point out that often when we go back like to the Glenn Beck show and things like that, you might have a feature on the show about how the economy was about to collapse. You better get gold, and then a gold ad right after that.
That's exactly right. You know, this the linkage between the political right wing and the idea of gold as offering a particular kind of security goes back decades, if not centuries. But it's a linkage that is especially strong today. You'll see, as we talk about in the piece, if you watch a Trump rally on Newsmax, sometimes half the screen while Trump is talking is taken up with an ad for American Hartford Gold, which is one of these companies. A lot of the email news alerts you get from Newsmax are, again, ads for gold IRA companies that are politically themed. The ads aren't saying, hey, you should buy our gold. It's got the pricing is good. It says, for instance, this is Biden and Yellen's secret plan to steal your hard-earned money and bail out their Wall Street buddies, was another ad. When we asked Hartford Gold about where they advertise, they say they advertise where it brings, where they believe it will create the most value.
Thanks a lot for that call. Carl is with us next in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Carl, hi.
Hi, I had started a gold IRA in 2011. And anyway, the fees increased every year. And at age 59, I was able to withdraw. So it was the Canadian gold pieces, but I had a 100-ounce bar of silver, unstamped and unmarked. And it was out of this outfit called Swiss America in Phoenix.
Hey, Carl, were you able to do something with that unmarked silver? Were you able to convert that into money to buy goods and services?
It's not stamped. It's not certified.
Interesting. Carl, thanks a lot for the call. Jeremy, have you run into any stories like that?
I've heard of that company. I don't know a ton about them. If you want to send me an email, I'll happily hear more about it to the caller. But, you know, this is an industry that has existed for quite a long time. What we wrote about may sort of be the most recent iteration. As you mentioned earlier, there was a blow up about this in around 2011. On the one side, you had Representative Anthony Weiner, who was sort of making political hay about Glenn Beck, who was then a Fox News broadcaster, who had really close ties to a company called Goldline. Goldline's still in business, but they were charged with a variety of sort of misdeeds related to people buying gold back then in 2011. The case settled without them admitting any sort of wrongdoing. They said their business practices were fully transparent. But a lot of their employees soon went elsewhere. And many of them founded the companies that still exist today, including Hartford Gold that we talked about a lot here, and Metals.com, the company I mentioned at the top of the hour, who advertised on Facebook. That company was raided by the FBI in 2020 and is no longer in business.
Thanks a lot for sharing that experience, Carl. In our last minute, Jeremy, as I mentioned, you had a follow-up piece where you talked to people, some experts about advice. One thing that seemed to be consistent from experts is, you know, if somebody's pressuring you on the phone to buy these things, if somebody's using scare tactics, that's a sign to take a closer look and back away. Can you give a sense of the sort of things that experts told you about these things? With the disclaimer, as you mentioned earlier, neither you nor I are investment advisors.
Right. I mean, that's the first thing to do is to make sure that this is the choice you want to be making. Don't fall for someone's marketing as far as what you ought to be doing with your investment, because it's your retirement savings. That's really important. You're depending on that. This is some of the best advice I heard was actually from Leslie Van Buskirk, who is the administrator of the Division of Securities there in Wisconsin at the Department of Financial Institutions. She was pointing out that every dealer charges some sort of markup because they have to pay their rent. Some of the, you know, reputable dealers charge a relatively small markup. It's far, far, far higher than you're going to see on stocks and bonds in general. But it's much smaller than some of these gold IRA companies have allegedly charged. And so what you need to do is figure out for whatever that someone is proposing to sell you, how much you could sell it for to someone else. Not how much the salesman says he might buy it back for later, but how much you could sell it for tomorrow at a local coin store in the town, you know, two towns away down the freeway, in case you needed to cash out, because that's how much it's actually worth.
Jeremy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yep, thanks for having me.
That's Jeremy Merrill, data reporter at the Washington Post. We talked to him today about targeted gold investment advertising on multiple forms of conservative media and on Facebook. We've got a link to his reporting at wpr.org/centraltime. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at investigations into Hunter Biden and what they mean for the Biden administration and beyond. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act capped out-of-pocket insulin costs for seniors on Medicare at $35 a month. A UW-Madison researcher tells us how that's affected access to the life-saving medication. Now, President Biden's son Hunter has been embroiled in controversy throughout his father's time in office and before. He has a history of substance abuse, has been scrutinized for business dealings with international firms in places like China and Ukraine. And he's facing criminal charges for tax violations and illegally possessing a firearm. A plea deal in the tax cases fell apart at the last minute just a few days ago. He's provided a target for Republican criticism against the president, rising to the level of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy floating the idea of an impeachment inquiry to investigate Biden family finances. A House Oversight Committee has already launched an investigation into Hunter Biden's alleged tax crimes. One of his former business partners, Devin Archer, met with the committee today behind closed doors. President Biden has stood by his son despite the negative spotlight his scandals have brought to the administration. We're learning more now about the investigations into Hunter Biden's activities and the politics surrounding them, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the controversies surrounding Hunter Biden? Do you think about these controversies? How do you think Congress should handle the investigation? What do you think of this plea deal that's, at least for now, delayed at best? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of multiple books, including Presidential Swing States, 3rd edition. David, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, and thank you to the audience for listening.
And we've got a lot of ground we can cover. David, let's start with the charges in this court case now. We had what looked like a plea deal done. The judge says, no, hold on. We don't know what's going to happen next there. Can you give us the background on those specific criminal charges against the president's son?
Well, the president's son has a variety of charges he faces, including illegal gun possession, questions regarding some drug possession, and a few other assorted ones. But But for the core, I think the core issue, what we're really thinking about here is something really fascinating, is that they reached out and negotiated a deal. That is the prosecution and his attorney. And rarely, rarely do we see a judge second guessing a plea deal. And what we saw happen last week was a judge that said, listen, the deal that was received here that you guys negotiated, I'm not sure this is appropriate, and wants to review it. So this is highly unusual in terms of what we're seeing and where it's actually going to unfold at this point, because it's possible that a lot of other charges had been, let's say, thrown out or negotiated out that could involve some questions regarding, again, we don't know a whole scope of it, but they could also include some things in terms of tax fraud, because that's one of the other charges he was pleading to, some like minor, you know, tax evasion and so forth. So we don't know the full scope that could have been out there, but needless to say, a judge second guessing a negotiated plea is very unusual.
Now let's look at the investigation here. This was started by a U.S. attorney named David Weiss, a U.S. attorney in Delaware, appointed in the Trump administration, approved, got bipartisan support, and entered that office, initiated this investigation under the Trump administration. A lot of times these U.S. attorneys, they are asked to resign when a new administration comes in. The Justice Department says, nope, you stay, complete this investigation. I bring this up because there's accusations that David Weiss, the attorney here, was playing softball in the Hunter Biden case. What are your thoughts on his role in this investigation and the plea deal, now rejected, at least for now, plea deal we ended up with?
Well, first off, it is unusual for U.S. attorneys to stay on when administrations change, or at least when, let's say, there's a change of party. It was probably smart on the part of the Biden administration not to dismiss him and put somebody else in place. It was an effort to try to at least create some sense that there was any type of partisan activity going on. Having said that, there are allegations from some whistleblowers and from some individuals within the Department of Justice that were claiming that even though he carried on from the Trump administration, again, some allegations that perhaps the investigation received some political pressure, that he did softball it a little bit. And I think this is where, or perhaps maybe the judge's concern, although I'm not sure, but putting aside partisanship for a few minutes here, in terms of it, this may be a legitimate question for Congress to look into regarding whether or not there really was any kind of improper pressure that was placed upon the prosecutor. And on the face of it, it doesn't look like there was, but I think until that's completely answered, I think we're going to have a variety of questions from the judge and perhaps from a lot of people in Congress and maybe public opinion wondering how this deal got negotiated down to where it's relatively minor in terms of what he's being charged with and what he was going to plead to.
Talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University of Law at the University of Minnesota, looking at criminal charges against Hunter Biden, the president's son, a plea deal rejected by the judge, members of Congress, the House Republican majority also starting investigations. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about this? What do you want to see from Congress when it comes to investigating Hunter Biden and the Biden family finances? Is this something you want to see Congress spending time on or not? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, there have been accusations from Democrats in particular saying these Republican investigations in the House, it's just a political fishing expedition, an election year, President Biden running for re-election. On the other hand, as you were just pointing out, this is the sort of thing that Congress is there to do, to investigate the executive branch and make sure it isn't bending the rules on the behalf of favorite individuals, the president's family or otherwise. What would you hope for the best kind of investigation to come out of congressional committees, given all that?
Well, what you would hope is that, again, there would be a truly bipartisan effort to try to figure out what's going on in this case. One would hope that the Department of Justice would be forthcoming in terms of providing witnesses and any other information. I mean, it may turn out on this because there's an, you know, an ongoing, at least until there's a plea deal, there's an ongoing legal case going on here. Some of this might not be able to take place in public, you know, because, you know, what if, for example, they're doing the investigation and the plea deal falls apart, and we have to go to trial or something like that. Issues regarding what materials would be aired in public become problematic if there's going to be a trial going on in this situation here. But if I could take a step back,
sure,
you know, if we can go back to really the 1970s, and it takes us back to when we had Archibald Cox, who was fired by Richard Nixon in the Saturday Night Massacre, who was trying to investigate Nixon in terms of what was going on in Watergate. We created this provision called a special prosecutor, which was supposed to be insulated from, let's say, presidential influence. And by the time we got to the inquiry into Bill Clinton, people soured on the idea of an independent prosecutor. The law expired, and we don't really have anything like that in place anymore. And the reason why I mention this is that, take us back to the Trump era, take it back to now, to Biden right now with Hunter Biden. There is an ongoing problem that we discovered 50 years ago. How do we actually investigate possible criminality that involves the executive branch or people related to the executive branch? And it may be that we need to be rethinking whether or not there is some type of special prosecutor law or some other system set in place. Now, granted, with Nixon, it was about criminality within the executive branch. No one's making, at least at this point, any allegations of criminality within the Biden administration. But rarely, I can't think of a situation off the top of my head where we've got a close family member of the president being investigated by the Justice Department. And this raises potentially the same types of conflict of interest issues as investigating criminality within the executive branch. So I think what I would really love to see out of this is something broader in terms of, is there a better process or policy that we could put in place more permanently to address allegations of criminality, and so that we don't have this constant sort of partisan bickering that's going on here.
Yeah, you point toward a big difficulty in American government. You've got the Attorney General, who's the head of the Justice Department. They're appointed by the president, confirmed by the U.S. Senate. In a case where they have to investigate that president or people close to them, technically the president is still their boss. And it sounds like you're saying we haven't quite figured out a way to insulate them from that kind of potential for interference.
No, you're absolutely correct. And the whole idea of having the special prosecutor law when we had it is that that person would be appointed by a judicial panel and subject to presidential removal only for bad behavior. But otherwise, the president would have limited control and the special prosecutor would have pretty broad independence. And in an ideal world, of course, we would live in a world where we never have to worry about criminality within the executive branch, that everybody's beyond reproach and doing their job, you know. But unfortunately, or, you know, we're all, you know, or realistically, we're all human, and things happen like that. And so we do need a better process. And I think the lesson that we're learning in the last 25 years, let's say since the Clinton administration, since the special prosecutor law expired, is that this very ad hoc approach may not be a satisfactory way of handling it. And we do need to go back and say, okay, what worked, what didn't work from the old special prosecutor law? Can we improve it? And can we come up with a better system in terms of how we handle this?
We're talking to political scientist and law professor David Schultz about Hunter Biden, the politics of the criminal and congressional investigations into the president's son. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the way Republicans have handled the Hunter Biden situation? Do you want to see further investigations into his conduct? Are you ready for the case to wrap up and move on? Do you think this will be an issue for voters to think about? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Oh, hey, and what do you think of David's suggestion? Bring back some kind of really independent special prosecutor for situations like this. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, with us today to look at the legal and political implications of ongoing investigations into President Biden's son, Hunter. A plea deal fell apart last week in a criminal investigation. Congressional committees led by House Republicans looking into the matter as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller. Gene is with us in Milwaukee. Gene, hello.
Hello. I'd like to know what why Hunter Biden is not part of the government. So why is Congress investigating him? Why not just a regular DA?
Gene, thanks for the call. Private citizen Hunter Biden with obviously prominent family connections. Why is this a job for Congress, David?
It's a job for Congress, I believe, because there are possible allegations that perhaps the president used his influence or, let us say, the machinery of government to try to either mitigate the investigation or in some way, shape, or form affect the investigation. And that I think that is the basis for what the Republicans are looking at. Now, should the Republicans be doing, or the House, I should say, in general, be doing their own inquiry into illegal behavior of Hunter Biden? No. I think the nexus, the hook, if I could use that phrase there, is there something going on in terms of how a criminal investigation by the Biden administration, may have been compromised because it involved his son?
Thanks a lot for that call. Gene, we'll go to Deborah now in Winona, Minnesota. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I really don't care what Hunter Biden did. What he did does not affect the presidency. It doesn't affect the government. What I would like to see Republicans do is actually govern, do what they were elected to do, pass, maybe do something about climate change and health care. That's all I have to say.
Deborah, thanks for the call. And there's a Politico article out there, David, with a lot of Republican members of Congress who seem to agree with Deborah, saying, yeah, we're not hearing much about Hunter Biden from our constituents. We're hearing about economy, the border, and crime and things like that. Your thoughts, David, putting on your political scientist hat now instead of your law professor hat, the political impact of all of this?
Yeah, this is an interesting question because one of my friends who works actually at Minnesota Public Radio used to use the phrase inside baseball. And it was a phrase that she used to say, these are the issues that people who are like the real political insiders or that very small percentage of the population truly care about. And polls are suggesting that's exactly the issue, is that if you, and again, these are polls, this is less my opinion, but if you're looking at public opinion polls at this point, the public is concerned about what? They're concerned about inflation. They're concerned about the economy. Republicans are concerned also about a range of issues that might include also abortion, et cetera, et cetera. So this may be an issue that the political insiders, those within Washington, D.C., find really intriguing. But right now, it does not look like it's really generating a lot of public interest or public support. At the same time, and I was actually giving a talk this morning about this, is someone asked me a very similar question, and I said that this person said, well, isn't this on parity with investigations into Trump? And I said, even if it were, Trump so much consumes the news cycle that it's not the Hunter Biden story is just not the main story for many people. And if Republicans are thinking that this is going to be the way of taking the focus away off of Donald Trump and his legal problems or other issues, again, the polls are not suggesting that that's a good bet.
Thanks again for that call, Deborah. A lot of the way our politics seems to work these days, David, is that there are stretches, especially coming into a primary election season, where the interests of the base, the hardcore members, supporters of a party who are definitely going to come out and vote in a primary, their issues can matter a lot. Could this be part of what's driving interest in the Hunter Biden story? In this case, the Republican base, who may feel very strongly about this.
I think you're absolutely correct in that situation here. I'm going to even narrow it. Again, if the polls are correct, the base cares about it. But even among the base, if you were to ask them and say, okay, rank order the issues that you think are most important to you, this probably, even among important issues, probably doesn't come in first, second, or third, or fourth. And so even among important issues, it's a lesser ranked type of question. But there's no question that probably for the talk radio, for the social media, for the hardcore base, this is consuming a lot of their chatter at this point. And this is probably what's generating in part the congressional interest in terms of talking about it.
We've heard House Speaker Kevin McCarthy float the idea that, hey, maybe we need an impeachment inquiry to look into the Biden family's financial dealings. He seems to have dialed that back a little bit. Implications from some members of his caucus that they're worried, oh, maybe if we keep looking, we'll find that some money went to then Vice President Biden at some point. What do you think of the notion of an impeachment inquiry to dig further into these issues and claims?
Well, first off, I'm going to bet a quarter with any listeners out there. And my bet is going to be that there'll be an impeachment inquiry and there'll be an effort to try to impeach Joe Biden, simply because in sort of our tit for tat political world, I think many members of Congress, Republicans in Congress, would like to be able to have an impeachment hanging over Joe Biden going into 2024. And if they can get the votes to actually get an impeachment vote and then force the Democratic-controlled Senate to have to do something next year. So regardless of the merits, and again, and you'll notice how I'm saying here is that I don't know where the investigation would go. You know, I've not prejudged it at this point, but I would say I think it's more likely than not that we will see momentum later this year, and especially going into next year, for an effort by the Republican House to try to do an impeachment. But right now, it does not sound like they have the votes to be able to pull this off. And even if they do, again, it becomes a question of how does this play out politically in 2024, when I think voters are looking to the Republicans to say, okay, tell us where you stand on reproductive rights. Tell us where you stand on the economy. Tell us where you stand on Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. It may not be a winning issue with the independent voters and the general public, but again, it might appeal to the base.
WPR will not facilitate that wager, David. You're on your own time on that one. Got you, just for another minute or so, expanded the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case, a couple new indictments related to allegations that President Trump, former President Trump by that point, ordered security tapes to be erased. Does this change much in terms of the wider investigation?
It adds additional charges. I think it now brings the charges against Donald Trump in that instance from 37 to 40. It's yet another obstruction of justice. It implicates another person in who was, I think, arraigned today, although that person didn't plead today because he didn't have an attorney. It probably doesn't significantly change the calculus down in the Florida investigation. It just adds more to it. But what I do think is a possibility is the fact that we now have another one of his subordinates, you know, who's been charged. One always has to wonder at some point, will there be a plea deal with a lesser person? You know, I can't remember what the person's title is now. And would this person now be willing to take a plea in terms of implicating Donald Trump? This becomes the complication. And then one other thing which has emerged is the fact that Donald Trump has raised quite a bit of money, but he spent nearly $40 million of his campaign funds on legal expenses. This is just going to be more legal expenses and more time that's diverted from him in terms of his campaign.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
My pleasure, and thank you, to the audience.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's with us today to talk about the president's son, Hunter Biden, and the congressional and criminal investigations into his conduct. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, from cities and states to the whole planet, we keep breaking temperature records in recent years. A NASA researcher joins the show to say we need to take action to avoid the potential for a climate collapse. You can join in with your thoughts and questions. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Two Food Fridays ago, we talked about mocktails, zero-proof cocktails, whatever you want to call them, and our guest mentioned the growing number of zero-proof alternatives to many spirits, your vodkas, gins, whiskeys, and so on. Last week, I mentioned that I had bought a zero-proof bourbon. Makes sense. I like bourbon. And I'd report back after I tried it. Well, here's my report. I was going to make something with it. I did a test pour and immediately realized it had cinnamon in it, which I get a weird reaction to, not like a dangerous allergic reaction. But long story short, I'm better off not consuming cinnamon. It appeared as natural flavor on the label, like it always does. Sadly, there was another zero-proof bourbon right next to it on the store shelf that I didn't get because an online review specifically mentioned the cinnamon. So, I can't tell you whether or not it's good. If you like cinnamon, you might like fake bourbon. I don't know. There is good news. I have a friend I can give it to, so it's not a total waste. If you have tried zero-proof spirits, love to hear what you thought. Email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time.